from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Fog. It's impossible to imagine the Bay Area without it. The way it filters through the harp strings of the Golden Gate Bridge, as Herb Cain famously once observed, puffing out its chest as though pleased with its dramatic entrance. If you live in the city, you know you can't stop it. And unlike the old sports cliche, you also know you can't hope to contain it. Fog seeps in. Always. Fog, arriving on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Only in San Francisco would fog have its own Twitter handle, at Carl the Fog, which made Time Magazine's list of best Twitter feeds last year. But when you think about it, why would that be? Why would people follow fog when it's fog that's always following us? It sweeps across the city. It seeps into your bones. And when it's not here, it's still here. It's just lurking, as any San Franciscan will tell you.
And it knows no boundaries. Leave the back window open, it comes right in the house, you know. And it defies this idea or assumption that we could create an entirely human-built world and somehow live apart from nature, you know, just because we're in a city, even a big, dense, busy, loud city like San Francisco. Can't do it.
That's an excerpt from Sam Green and Andy Black's new documentary about fog. And that's what we're going to envelop ourselves in for this hour of Forum, fog. What do you feel like when you wake up in the morning and see fog, and only fog? Is it your muse or your source of misery? Fog, our topic this hour, and we're going to give out the phone number right away if you have some thoughts about fog, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your fog thoughts on our website or Facebook page. We're joined first by Sam Green, whose Fog City film will be part of a series of things that are going on at the Exploratorium this weekend, and the film itself be premiered next week, October 2nd and 3rd. Sam Green, thanks so much for being part of our program this morning.
Thank you for inviting me on.
So as you walked over this morning and you were thinking about fog and thinking about how fog is in, it's not only always with us, it's sort of people are sort of focused and fascinated and taken up by it. Why do you think that is?
It's a good question. And as I was walking over, I was thinking, I don't really have a good answer for this. But I did have some thoughts. And one of them was that in the past couple years, it seems like fog has gone from a private phenomenon, something you see. If it was really fantastic, you might call your friend on your cell phone and say, wow, the fog at Twin Peaks is fantastic, to becoming much more of a public phenomenon, where with Carl, for example, there's a sort of citywide dialogue about the fog on Twitter at all times and Instagram. You can show people your photos. So it's something we're much more able to talk about in the past couple years, which is great.
And it's also, as the woman in the film excerpt that we played in the introduction so, I think, accurately says, you can't escape it. You just can't. I mean, no matter what, it's kind of – it's a constant. In a way, it's a kind of common denominator for anyone who lives in the city and in the Bay Area.
Yeah, that's one thing that really drew me to it. And by the way, the woman in that soundbite is Megan Prelinger, who's – lives out in the avenues and is a real lover of fog. But I really was drawn to the idea that it is this shared experience and it's woven so deeply into the city's identity. And it's something we almost all experience in either positive or negative ways. People love it. People hate it. But everybody has something to say about it, which is fascinating for a documentary filmmaker.
Explain, if you would, the form that you take documentary, because it's in itself interesting. What I viewed yesterday is sort of a kind of scratch track version of the film, what you'll actually be doing. Because when it's actually shown October 2nd and 3rd, the narration that I heard, which is just sort of a one run at it from you, you'll actually be performing live. Tell us why you do that and what it allows you to do in terms of the filmic experience.
Okay. I've been making documentaries for a long time, and I've made a lot of traditional documentaries. But a couple of years ago, I sort of stumbled onto this form that I've really been completely charmed by, and that's what I call live documentary, where I put together a film and I narrate it in person, standing up on the stage and cue the images from a laptop while a live band plays a soundtrack. So it's all the elements of a film, but it happens live. And I really love this form. For filmmakers today, you have to accept that people are watching your stuff on an iPhone while they're doing Facebook updates and just this very diminished cinematic experience. And I'm not a Luddite. I don't hate the internet, but I don't necessarily want my work to be experienced that way. So I love this live form because I'll come You put the whole thing together, come to the cinema. If it's a show we've traveled to, we'll go all the way there. The people will pay something. They'll come into the theater and have this sort of magical experience. That's the magic of cinema, to have this collective experience. And it will never be the same twice.
It's so interesting because in a way what you're doing is creating a form that combines film, a little bit of sort of jazz improvisation, and talk radio. I mean, right? I mean,
it's true.
Sort of, and sometimes I suspect a little bit of call and response.
Yeah.
That you kind of adjust what you're doing sort of based on what you're getting back from the audience that's experiencing.
Certainly. It's fun. I really love it, and it's a big challenge. I'm not necessarily a performer, so getting up in front of people is terrifying, but challenges are great. So it's a form I like. And for this film, too, it seems particularly appropriate because fog is a kind of a thing that people love to talk about. And sitting there watching it alone, a film alone on your phone, and then sort of just going on to email seems a shame. It's great to have this experience where everybody's there in the wonderful new Exploratorium Theater, having this collective experience with special guests there. So I'm excited about the shows.
Sam Green, again, he'll be performing his documentary October 2nd and 3rd. That's next Wednesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock and at 9 o'clock at the Exploratorium, and will be accompanied by the band Quavers, who will be performing along with him. Let's sort of now kind of swoop back into the world of fog, and I want to ask you about an observation you make, which you may or may not make live right at the beginning of the film, which is you talk about how when you first started filming it, you wanted to kind of go on and on with it, that you loved the experience of driving around and taking it in, and that it also happened at a time when you had a loss in your life, and that there was something that was enveloping and consoling about fog.
Yeah, so I started the film about 4 years ago with my longtime collaborator Andy Black, a great cinematographer, and we were getting ready to shoot. Our plan was to shoot every September for a couple years and just get as much as we could get. And fog's a challenge to shoot. You never know where it's going to be. We ended up having to just drive around town often, looking at webcams, trying to figure out where it was, and often you'd see it was on Telegraph Hill and you'd zip over there and it'd be gone. It'd be on the next hill. So right around the time we started this project, I had a very, very big loss in my life. I lost somebody. And so we spent many weeks just driving around town looking for the fog. And it was a real purpose, but there was something very soothing about fog. Fog evokes, for me, a lot of notions of the cycle of life and basic elements of our existence, the air, the wind, the water, the tides. It's that, to me, was just very soothing personally. And so as we chased the fog around town for several weeks, I really started to see a lot in it, a lot of sort of poetic or deeper truths to the fog. So that is infused in this film as well, in a light way.
Does it mean different things to you at different times? Can fog be consoling one day, cheering another?
Oh, yeah. There's a great local filmmaker named Nick Dorsky, and I interviewed him, and he made a point that really resonated with me. He said, fog is like depression. When you're inside of it, it can be terrible, and you feel like you'll never get out. And he was meaning those August days when the fog is just a lid over the city, can't see anything. He lives in the Avenue, so after weeks of that, it is like a depression. But when you're outside of it, when it's one of those blue sky days and the fog's coming over Twin Peaks, you're in the Mission looking up, it's romantic and beautiful.
You know, one of the things about both your film and another film that I looked at that will also be, I think, part of the Fog Festival that we'll be learning about more a little bit later in the program today at the Exploratorium. I agree with all of what you just said to an extent. And here's my own caveat about fog, which is that if it's so great, why is it that in films it's always fast motion, you know? Because you don't experience fog that way.
Right.
When I lived in the city and I would look out at Twin Peaks and I would see it sort of coming my way, it's more ominous. It doesn't really act in fast motion, which is what makes it so lovely in everyone's films.
It's true. It's true. I think there is a tendency because fast motion or that stop motion is so overused these days. I mean, often it's completely gratuitous. But with fog, the interesting thing is you can see it often is like an ocean, but it's like an ocean over time. So being able to see that speeded up allows you to see that kind of motion. But you're right. Sometimes just the sort of hanging there is the most ominous or dramatic or epic quality to it. So I tried to resist the fast motion impulse as much as I could.
Fog also doesn't really come with its own soundtrack. That's actually just a filmic device, by
the
way. let's join into our conversation now, Jan Null. He is a meteorologist, teaches meteorology at the Department of Health and Climate Sciences at San Francisco State University, and was the former lead forecaster for the National Weather Service. He's been a Bay Area meteorologist for nearly 40 years and has experienced lots of fog. Jan Null, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Give us your own explanation, if you would, about the phenomenon that Sam Green and I were just talking about the fog that comes in over Twin Peaks, the one that we so often associate with living in San Francisco and in the Bay Area. What is that? Is that really fog? What causes it?
Well, a lot of what people call fog is not, at least meteorologically speaking, is fog. It's stratus. But all that fog is a cloud that's touching the ground. So the low clouds that you might have over Ocean Beach and are often referred to by people in San Francisco, even going back to Herb Kane days, as high fog, when that touches the ground, then it technically becomes fog. So it's more a matter of location like a lot of other things.
So do we have so there's sort of an a la carte menu of fog that we experience in the Bay Area?
Well, we actually kind of see three different flavors of fog. The one that is most prevalent, what we've seen a good portion of this past summer, probably even more than usual, is advection fog. And that's when the air flows from the Pacific flows over the cold water that upwells along the California coast, which is why, you know, you go to Ocean Beach, you put your toes in the water, they turn blue. As the interior part of the state heats up during summer days, that creates low pressure and it draws that marine air inland. As that air moves over that cold water, it condenses out into cloud particles. And that forms, and then that moves on inland on a very regular basis, and it's all a very predictable schedule. You know, like the predictable schedules, like a thunderstorms in Florida, our fog is fairly predictable as far as timing as it moves on inland. That's flavor one. Flavor two of fog is we get some what's called upslope fog. That same cool air off the Pacific. It might not have condensed out over the cold waters, but as it rises up over the coast range, over the ridge that runs north and south through the center of the city, through Twin Peaks and Sutro Tower area, you will see that air will condense out. You get a little strip of low cloud, and as it touches the ground, thus fog in that area. And so that's upslope fog. And then the final flavor is radiation fog. And not much of that actually forms in the bay. That's more of what forms out in the interior valleys, especially the Central Valley, called on a colloquial basis as Thule fog. Wintertime, though, some days that flows back out the Sacramento River, out through the Delta, through San Pablo, North San Francisco Bay, and that's when we get that real low-hanging fog right down on the water that sweeps in and gives us typically a very, very bitterly cold days.
Jen Null, meteorologist who teaches at San Francisco State, former lead forecaster for the National Weather Service. That last kind of fog, I suspect, is what Herb Kane meant when he observed that when the city is all covered with fog, it's like living inside a great gray pearl, sort of a classic Herb Kane description. We'd like to hear your descriptions of fog. Do you love it? Do you hate it? What's your own favorite take on fog? Is there a place you'd like to go to experience fog, a place you'd like to go to avoid it? You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. We'll start taking calls in just a moment. Before we do, though, I want to play one more clip from Sam Green's film. And please stay with us, Jen Null, to take our questions once those start rolling in. But this is sort of the classic love-hate bit of how people feel about fog. We'll just hear a little bit of a couple that Sam interviewed about how they react to fog.
You know, my general take is it can be really beautiful at times, and at other times when you're just over the edge of, you know, feeling kind of cold, it you get frustrated.
No, excuse me. The fog sucks. You're totally sugarcoating it. We hate the fog. The fog just brings like these doldrums on. You wake up in the morning and you look out the window and it's like right in front of your window. It's totally depressing.
Two views of fog. Is that sort of like the pro and con? It's like watching McNeil Lehrer or something. You've got to get both points.
Well,
that was
a funny moment because we were interviewing him and he was sort of wishy-washy about it. And then she barged into the frame and just said, you know, no way. We hate it.
So we asked our listeners on Facebook to complete the sentence, fog is, and here are some of the responses we got. Fog is magical. Fog is romantic. Fog is what happens in San Francisco when it's 75 and sunny anywhere else on the peninsula. And Andy writes, fog is like family, not always when you're in what you're in the mood for, but one of the ways you know that you're home. Would you is that sort of one that you would go with, Sam Green?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that goes back to that idea I mentioned about it being woven very deeply in the city's identity and the experience of people who live here.
Rob writes, I bought a house about a year ago in Merced Heights in the western end of San Francisco, and all my friends thought I was crazy. They couldn't imagine living in the cold and fog, but I couldn't be happier. Having grown up in the southeast of the United States, I deal with heat and humidity all my life. Now I turn the heat on in July, and I love it. Jen, that reminds me of something that I think you have observed, which is that people always assume that Miami is the most humid place on the planet, but it's not, right?
No, it's not. And this is actually a question I always ask my classes on the first night of the semester is, which of the following cities has the highest average relative humidity? And I give them Miami, Atlanta, Honolulu, and San Francisco. And it will be a very odd person who will answer San Francisco. But in fact, our humidity here is higher than Miami or Atlanta or Honolulu. What most people, when they think humidity, they think heat and humidity. But humidity just is speaking to the amount of moisture and water vapor in the air. And as I and Sam have been talking about, I mean, that's is an ever-present part of the cityscape.
And yet, as you also point out, if you look at a list of the 20 foggiest cities, San Francisco's not on it, right? How come?
Well, it's not on it because most places where fog measurements are taken, and usually when we're talking about fog measurements, we're talking about visibility. And visibility measurements are taken at airports. Well, we don't put many airports out on the coast. We want those in an area that's not going to be quite as foggy. And so the location of SFO is not in a foggy part of the Bay Area. Probably would have to go like up to Point Reyes, which is probably one of the foggier spots, the way it sits out into that cold upwelled water along the West Coast.
It always makes me wonder when Chrissy Field was an actual airfield, what it must have been like to land a plane there and what sort of fog they would have had to contend with. Let's hear what our listeners are thinking about fog this morning. Rich in Napa. Napa, you don't have fog. Rich, go ahead.
Hi. Well, once in a while we have fog in Napa, but I grew up in Berkeley, and one of the things I miss the most about Berkeley, I grew up in the hills, and I remember playing in the evenings at the park across the street, and there were big trees, and as the evening would progress, the fog would come across the bay, and it would finger through the trees, and it was just so beautiful and peaceful and cooling, and I remember being up at the Lawrence Hall of Science and seeing it come through the gate and thinking just how beautiful. I miss it so much. Sometimes I'm driving down 101, and if I approach the tunnel in Marin, I see the fog fingering over the top of the hills, and I just remember, growing up with it. My brother lives in the Oakland Hills, and he's constantly grumbling about the fog, saying, oh, it's cold and miserable here, and I just miss it. It's just, it was always so quiet and comfortable.
Yeah, you can tell from what you're saying, Rich, how true that is for you. Thank you. Thanks for adding that to our conversation this morning. Mary in Stinson Beach has our next foggy observation. Mary.
Hi. Yes, I am in Stinson Beach most of the time now. I've been going there for years, but now I live there part-time. And it's like Alan Watts called the cloud-hidden whereabouts unknown place. The fog comes in and out so many different days, and a lot of people don't like to go there. They think it's cold, et cetera, but it's the most magical place for me, and it's just as beautiful to me when it's foggy as it is when it's sunny. It changes every hour, really, what's going on and what you can see and what you can't see, and I feel so snug and ethereal being there.
Hmm. Mary, thank you. What are your favorite fog spots, Sam Green? And then I want to ask you something similar, Jen Nelva. Where do you have places you go that you're to just sort of take it all in?
Yeah, well, up at the top of Twin Peaks is pretty great. And it's also, I have to say, slightly amusing to see, especially in the summer, the tourist buses come every 10 minutes and drop off European tourists in shorts and T-shirts.
It's a great scene in your film of a guy in a Yale shirt and shorts thinking,
freezing.
This is not the San Francisco I thought I was coming to.
So that's, that's one of my favorites. Ocean Beach is always great. There's a bunch of different spots.
How about for you, General?
Oh, I think my favorite spot has to be up along the Marin Headlands, watching the fog, sort of move in and out of the Golden Gate, and as the towers go up and down, apparently as the fog sort of surges, and then as a photographer with the lighting of the bridge into the fog, is certainly at the top of my list.
We have to take a short break, but just real quickly, General, and then you can expand on it when we return. There's a new story out this morning in the news about climate change and that we are approaching ever more a danger point with that. Will climate change affect fog?
It will affect probably lots of different weather elements in very subtle ways. And I think fog will be in some subtle ways that we can talk about for sure.
All right. Jen Null joining us. He'll have more answers to any of your meteorological questions about fog. We'll hear more from Sam Green and also talk about some festivals that are coming up, including one at the Exploratorium that is going to be focused on fog that starts tomorrow out at Pier 15. We'll talk about that when we return. And we'd love to hear your thoughts also on fog. If you have a favorite quote, if you have a favorite place that you go to take it all in, give us a call and let us know what you think about that. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. If you want to post your thoughts about fog and answer our question, fog is, just go to our Facebook page. You can do that there. And when we return, we will also have a little bit of Q&A with @CarlTheFog, the Twitter account that is fog itself. All coming up in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Fog is what we are taken up with during this hour of Forum. We'd love to hear your thoughts, observations, feelings about fog. You can join us at 866-733-6786. Post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website. Email us as well. And we're joined by Sam Green, who has a lovely documentary that he will be performing. It's an interesting combination of performance and film that he'll be doing at the Exploratorium on October 2nd and 3rd, Wednesday and Thursday next week at 7 and 9. We're also joined by Jan Null, the meteorologist who knows everything about fog and can answer all of your questions. And we're joined now as well by Marina McDougall, who is the director of the Center for Art and Inquiry at the Exploratorium. And Sam's film, of course, is part of, Marina, what you're going to be doing starting tomorrow. So if people head to Pier 15 tomorrow, tell us something about what's going to be there.
Yes, well, we're having what we think might be San Francisco's first ever fog festival, celebrating this very maligned meteorological phenomenon in San Francisco. And so we have an incredible program of films starting at noon. Our cinema arts program is put together, including Simon Christian's film Adrift. Simon Christian is an animator at Pixar, and in his free time, he's a fog chaser.
It's a lovely, lovely film, although it has all that fast-motion fog
right.
and music to make it all sound so pretty. But yes, right. it's a lovely film. Yeah.
And other short films by Mark McGowan and Michael Rednick. We've had this amazing installation by an artist, Fujiko Nakaya, who's based in Japan. It's part of our Over the Water program, a new program featuring large-scale works in our public realm.
And that's where you can actually experience fog. It has like 800 nozzles shooting fog in surrounding this bridge outside the Exploratorium.
Yes, Fujiko actually has the wonderful claim to fame of creating the world's first ever fog sculpture in 1970. And she's created these around the world, but never in San Francisco, where we have fog. But she's bringing more fog to San Francisco in a kind of sunny pocket. And it's her work is called Fog Bridge, and it's located on a pedestrian bridge that spans Pier 15 and Pier 17. So you can actually walk through it. And depending on the kind of day you get, it's a very different experience. So, for example, today is nice and warm, and the fog really envelops you. Sometimes you can even put your hand out in front of you and not see your fingertips.
So although it's unfortunately the installation is going to be, I know, closing soon. It's a place where if you live out in the avenues and you have a sunny day and you just can't stand it, you could go there, right?
And it's
experience.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's a kind of microcosm. And what's been fun about having it here over the last 6 months is that you kind of are able to see what's normally invisible.
Yeah.
Because wind is not normally something we don't see, nor is humidity. And so it's always, she's having a kind of conversation with the wind through the work.
And so, one other element of your festival we should mention is something you're going to be doing, Sam, which is a kind of, Jay Leno has fog as guests, right? Describe what you're going to be doing.
I'm going to, tomorrow at the Exploratorium in the afternoon, do a kind of talk show about fog. So I'm going to have a lot of guests and interview them sort of like we're doing right here. The great writer Rebecca Solnit, Jan Null, who's on this show. I'm going to talk to Carl the Fog and a lot of other people about fog, and it hopefully will be exciting and interesting.
By the way, we sent Carl the Fog, at Carl the Fog, his Twitter account, a couple of questions, see what he would respond. And here's one. We asked him, what do you say to people who find fog depressing? His answer, if the most depressing part about living in the Bay Area is my fluffy and loving embrace for a few months in the summer while everyone else is sweltering in the 90s and 100s, well, I think you've got it pretty good. So there's Carl the Fog's persona. So it sounds like a lovely day of full of fog, Marina McDougall. Thanks so much for letting us know about it. All day Saturday, anything else that we should point out about what people can experience at the Exploratorium?
Well, there's also going to be live music by a group called N. They're doing a tribute to the fog called The Sound of Fog. That's Maxwell August Croy and James Devane. And one of our own exhibit developers, Charles Sowers, a prototype that he's developing called Fog Fall. He's going to talk about, he's going to show that and talk about his process as an exhibit developer developing works at the museum. So that's 12 to 5, and it'll be a full day of fun, and actually Fujiko Nakaya will be there signing a catalog of her work, so if anybody's interested in meeting her.
All right. Marina McDougall, Director of the Center for Art and Inquiry at the Exploratorium. Thanks so much for being part of our program today. More questions coming in. Here's one for you, Jindal. Faye writes, foghorns I can hear on the bridge are very pleasantly mellow. Interestingly, one can call the phone of the Golden Gate Bridge, and while hearing the foghorn there, you can count the seconds until it's heard by the bare ear and estimate the distance of a storm. I know this sounds crazy, but I heard it on forum a few years ago. So I guess wants to know if that's really true, that you could listen and then count the seconds, and that would tell you when the fog is rolling in. Jindal, does that compute?
It doesn't totally compute. I think it might be confusing a little bit where you count the seconds when you hear thunder, or between the time you hear thunder and when you have seen the lightning. So because sound travels at about a mile in 5 seconds. So every 5 seconds, that lightning is a mile away. So 15 seconds after you see the lightning, you hear the thunder, that means the lightning was 3 miles away. With the fog, it's not going to move nearly that fast. So it certainly is a way you can kind of judge your distance away from where the foghorn is. But I think that would be about all.
Okay, let's hear from our listeners now on fog. William in San Francisco. William, go ahead.
Yes, my name is William Farley, and I'm having a show of fog at night at the Museum of Modern Art Artist Gallery at Fort Mason. It's up in. Hello.
Yep, you're still on, William. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's up until October 24th. And I only shoot fog at night. I start out about 3 o'clock in the morning because basically the bars are closed and most of the people have been drinking are home by then, and usually the hoodlums have run out of energy. So at 3 o'clock it feels pretty safe, and I drive around looking for fog, and I really consider what I'm doing a conversation because I just drive in the direction. I really don't know where I'm going.
Yeah, William.
So,
yeah, Sam wants to add
in an observation.
I just wanted
to say Bill Farley's photographs are fantastic. They're magical and really definitely worth checking out. The quiet of that time with the fog is pretty spectacular.
And tell us again, William, where people could go to see them?
It's at the San Francisco Museum of Art at Fort Mason, and the show is up until October 24th. And basically it's this conversation I've been having with the fog for about 7 years. Mm. And I only shoot it at night. It's from 3 until, not sunrise, because the sky turns blue very early, even before the sun comes up. But when it's really dark, I'm out there looking and driving around until I find something that has available light and that the fog is in juxtaposition of that light.
Sounds lovely. Thank you, William. And of course, Fort Mason itself is not a bad place to take in a little bit of fog itself. So thank you. Thanks so much for adding that in. Here's some additional tweets coming in. Nick writes, fog is the best home field advantage the San Francisco Giants ever had. Well, not yet, not this year. Another listener says, fog is prettier on the outside than on the inside. That's interesting, though. That's sort of the opposite of the Herb Cain, Sam Green idea that it's like living inside a great gray pearl. Do you like it from the inside out or the outside looking in?
Well, no, I agree with Nick Dorsky. His idea about fog is like depression. On the inside, it's sort of oppressive, but from the outside, it can be romantic and spectacular. So I honestly would much rather sit outside in the sun and regard it than be inside it.
Therese writes, gosh, I love foggy mornings. I remember when my mom used to say, get the clothes off the line before the fog comes in. Of course, I'm old, and it used to be much foggier in the evening. Is that true, Jindal? Did we used to have more fog?
No, the amounts of fog have been fairly constant over the years, at least here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Here's another question about changes in fog. When we moved to Santa Clara County 55 years ago, there were many more foggy nights and mornings. Now there's maybe one morning a year. Is it because of increased housing and roads and less agriculture? Or, Jindal, is that just a perception that, as you're suggesting, maybe really is not necessarily the case?
No, probably in some of the outlying areas. And remember, 50 years ago, Santa Clara Valley, there's a lot of agriculture, so there's lot more moisture on the ground, and you would get areas of radiation fog. So there would have been more foggy mornings down in those areas and some of the areas that are built up now.
Back to our callers. Mike in Sonoma is on with us. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, I live in the hills west of the town of Sonoma, and the fog rolls over the hills there and through what's called the Petaluma Gap, and it does wonderful things for the Pinot Noir grape.
Huh. What does it do?
Well, it gives that cool morning, and then it goes away, and we get sun the rest of the day, and it's just a good combination of coolness and hot sun, which is great for the Pinot Noir grape, specifically Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Did not know that, Mike. Thank you. Are there other what are some other fog contributions, I guess, to the Bay Area besides good grape growing, Jan Nall? Are there things that fog allows to happen in the Bay Area that wouldn't happen otherwise?
Yeah, and probably one of the most dramatic one are the redwoods that we have.
Oh, yeah.
Muir Woods and down in the Santa Cruz Mountains, the size of the needles on the redwoods are very good at capturing the moisture that's coming in with the fog, and their estimates, 20 to 40% of the moisture that they get during the course of a year are coming from the fog. It's not coming from rain. And if you've ever camped in the redwoods at in the summertime when the fog is coming in, I mean, it's like it's raining all night as the redwoods capture that moisture and it condenses out and then it falls around the drip line of the trees.
I was going to say the fog also in some ways keeps Ocean Beach spectacular. If there wasn't fog, it'd be Miami Beach. The whole town would be built up there. So thanks to fog, we have this wonderful sort of empty beach.
James in Oakland, what would you like to say about fog?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I actually grew up in the Avenues with my father, and he used to always point out the foghorns, and he really liked the sound of them. And I don't live in the city anymore, but when he passed a number of years ago, I'll kind of pick him up every now and then, and it's always a nice reminder of him, I guess.
Yeah, thank you, James. It's true, the association and memory and emotion that we connect up with something like that very distinct and particular sound, Sam.
Yeah, I love the foghorns for that reason. You hear them at night when you're drifting off to sleep, and there's something very just profound about them in a simple way, and they're very evocative. So we interviewed for this film a person turning them on and off at the Golden Gate Bridge, which was really interesting to see. And he also let me turn them on, which was a great thrill.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. And it's fascinatingly simple. I mean,
yeah.
it's not like this. I can't remember how you put it exactly in the film. Maybe you don't want me to give that away. But it's not exactly like, air traffic control at SFO.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple thing. Just a Radio Shack controller on the wall, which is great. It works great.
Some other thoughts. Jessica writes, I love it. I hate it. It's reliable. That's interesting. Maddening, inspiring, cozy, lonely, cold, awesome. I love the sound of the distant foghorns at night. I love stepping out at 11 o'clock to walk the dog and see the fog rushing past, swirling in the sycamore leaves in the light of the lamppost. Wow, Jessica, that was lovely. Thank you. Mayella writes, seeing the fog roll over Twin Peaks reminds me of the promise the mission holds of seeing and feeling the sun while the other side of the city is enveloped by cold and darkness. Entering the fog brings back memories of taking our bus rides to go to good schools. I'm fortunate to be in the sunny Mission. And Boris writes, we live in the forest knolls between Twin Peaks and the inner Sunset and would regularly see the fog blowing in and enveloping our windy streets. It feels like Jurassic Park. However, the falling condensation from the fog was miserable and cold, and one of the reasons we moved to the East Bay. It really is, Jan Nall, this sort of can't live with it, can't live without it.
There's a real dichotomy, as I'm sure Sam has found in talking to all the people that he has, about people that either love it or hate it. There's not a lot of people that are sort of on the fence as far as fog.
Here's some responses to at Carl the Fog. Pete tweets, Carl, your best experience in moderation, but too often you overstay. You're welcome. Stephen says, fog is a volumeless, textureless oblivion that makes the sky watching impossible. It's the worst. Michael tweets, fog is what defines our city. Love it. Laura says, fog is our natural air conditioner. This is amazing what this brings out. No. What do you make of this, Sandrine?
I've always, when you work on a documentary film, you have hundreds of conversations with people. What are you up to? I'm doing a documentary on fog. And one of the things I've liked about this project is everybody has something to say. Often people will tell you about a place they've seen spectacular fog or their thoughts on it. And you can see from these tweets and comments, people are pretty inspired and eloquent about it as well.
Bettina writes in, my son had asthma when he was young, and the fog was a reliable trigger, or should I say a reliable predictor. He'd start coughing half an hour before the fog would roll in. What do you make of that, Janelle?
Well, I think that's probably just the increase in the amount of the humidity as well as the cool air that is driving it. And I know my son had asthma, and it would be those first chill winter and fall mornings and evenings when it was beginning to get foggy that he would have problems as well.
Robert in El Granada is up next. Robert, go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. Out here on the coast side, my wife and I have developed terminology for different fog variants.
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on. Rob Spate, engineer, we're actually hearing you on the air as well, Rob. So if you would back off for a bit. And Robert, go ahead, please.
Oh, yeah. So out on the coast out here in the Half Moon Bay, my wife and I have developed some terminology for different fog experiences. So when it condenses out, we don't call it drizzle. We call it foggle. and I'll tell you one other is when the sun is sort of trying to break through and the sky gets very white and bright, we call it fog shine.
Perfect. So we could create a whole new lexicon of fog.
If you name it, you sort of feel more connected to it.
All right, Robert, thank you. Thanks a million. Okay, that's great. Lori in Sacramento, go ahead.
Hi. For years, I've had a love affair with fog. And as I sit here and listen to everyone else, I'm reminded of 30 years ago, the first time I drove in fog from Lodi to Stockton as a teenager and had no idea what it was. You know, for years I'd walk to school in the fog, but it was an entirely different animal when I drove in it the first time.
It's interesting, Sam Green and Lori, thank you for that. It's all these associations, you know, it's like the old business of Proust and lemons or whatever that people bring back with their sort of first loves, their first experience with fog.
Yeah, it's very associative, and somehow it gets connected to deep feelings and memories. And I can't really explain that connection between fog and those ways of being, but it is there. I mean, I experienced that with myself with this project I mentioned earlier.
We have another person who has had to deal with navigating the fog who's joined us now, and that's Captain Greg Waugh, who's a retired San Francisco bar pilot who would sort of nudge ships around in the fog for some 32 years, fourth generation San Franciscan. So a San Franciscan through and through, and has had to deal with the fog out in the thick of it. Captain Waugh, thank you for joining in our conversation.
You're quite welcome.
And tell us what that's like. We just heard what it's like to drive in the valley when you've got the fog surrounding you. Give us, if you can, your best description of what it's like when you're out on the water and you're having to poke your way through the fog.
Well, it's kind of like driving down the freeway with the hood up on your car. You know, the big difference, of course, if you're on the road, you can pull over and stop. If you're underway with the ship, you don't have that luxury. And, you know, with the fact that with today's ships, you know, I mean, a small ship today is, you know, 750 feet in length.
Yeah.
And, of course, taking the fog to Stockton up the San Joaquin River, if you have a Panamax ship that's 105 feet wide and the channel's only 200 feet wide, you're pretty limited where you can go. You can't stop, so you do your best on with the tools that they give you. Now, of course, the chart plotters make it a lot easier with the GPS having correctable distances down to 10 feet now, which adds to it. But
does technology solve it all, or is it part of it still instinctive, or that you have to kind of rely on, I guess, more elemental ways of doing what you have to do?
Absolutely. Experience, you know, for a pilot, experience is the key. And you know, the first time that you get caught in that situation, you know, it's absolutely terrifying. I was listening to some of your previous callers talking about the fog and where's their favorite place to be. For a maritime pilot, their favorite place to be in the fog is somewhere else. also listening to Jan Noll, and all his descriptions, it takes me back to the pilot examination. One of the big parts of that examination is wind, weather, tides, and currents, and about the advection fog, convection fog, and the Thule fog, and all that. It's what pilots are trained to do. Every 3 to 5 years, the pilots, even after you become a pilot, every 3 to 5 years you go for refresher training and in computer simulation to use these instruments they give you in the fog. But there's still that instinct, that
yeah,
the seat of the pants part of it, you know, so, that you know you're in the right place.
So we have to get a few more callers on the line, Captain Waugh, but stay with us if you will. But I'm just curious about where you are now. I mean, if you're retired and the last place you want to be in the fog, don't tell me that you've moved to Las Vegas or something.
No, I live up in the North Bay, up in Pengrove. But, of course, the sickness continues. When I retired, I bought a sailboat. So I still get caught in the fog once in a while. But now I have more of a choice of when I go out in it and when I
right.
don't.
Well, I think there's probably no one I'd rather be with, I think, if I were out in a boat in the fog than you, Captain Greg Waugh. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's hear from some other callers. Anne in San Mateo. Anne, go ahead.
Hi. I was invited to a dinner party once by a friend who was leaving the area, and she invited us to bring something, her idea of bring some food that you think I'm going to miss by not being in the San Francisco area. And my thought was, well, if I were leaving San Francisco, sure, there'd be food that I miss, but what I would really miss was that view that she probably had from Berkeley, Oakland, of the fog coming in over the city skyline. So I figured out how to bring the fog to the dinner party in the form of a dry ice punch and made this city skyline out of cheese.
See, you brought bring your own fog was your approach to the party. That's great. Thank you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Ann. Phil in San Francisco, go ahead.
Yes, I teach English as a second language in San Francisco, and I teach counters with non-count nouns, and fog is definitely a non-count noun, but some of the counters I've heard meteorologists say, the fingers of fog are rolling in, the clouds are rolling in, and I hear the meteorologists say the layer of fog is maybe 1,100, 1,200, 1,300 feet deep, and then when we see the meteorologists on the TV, they say the fog bank is out here and it's expected to roll in. And I'd like to ask the professor, what other counter words can I tell my students to use when they're describing fog?
So by counter words, Phil, I'm
like a drop of water, the fingers of fog.
Oh, okay. All right. How you
fog,
measure it.
The layer
yeah.
of fog,
right. Got
the
it.
Fog bank.
Got it. Yeah.
Things.
Okay. Jan Noll, go ahead.
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I mean, that's probably why I became a scientist and not an English professor.
Yeah, this is one time where it's hard to be. I mean, it's hard to be precise about fog, isn't it, Sam?
Oh yeah,
it's not definable in that sort of quantitative way that we might like.
It's very ephemeral and very mercurial.
Paul writes in, I was camping on Mount Tam on the 4th of July, and the whole Bay Area was covered in fog, but Mount Tam was above it. When it started getting dark, I hiked up the hills to see if I could see fireworks. Boy, there's a hope over experience. The fireworks started, and a lot of them were shooting up through the fog, blossoming like flowers growing. Others were in the fog, so the fog looked like a nebula in space, all lit up with color. Unforgettable. That's amazing. People always complain about the fog on the 4th of July, but they took it in just the right way. What did Sam learn about foghorns when he was working on this film? Can he or Jan talk about foghorns, how they work. I live in the Richmond. I hear foghorns every night. What'd you learn?
Well, I had not really known anything about them other than you hear them. And there are a number of them around the bay. The ones that I looked into and filmed were on the Golden Gate Bridge. And there's two sets. And they have a regular pattern to them, which is interesting. Once you learn the pattern, you can kind of identify that's the South Tower, that's the North Tower. And I learned also that the electricians at the Golden Gate Bridge are the ones that turn them on and off. And they keep a great log of all the times they've been turned on and off, the time they're turned on. And it's a handwritten log, and it goes back many years.
And there's a very scientific and very complicated formula for when they turn them on and when they turn them off, right?
They go out and look, and if the fog is under the bridge, they turn them on. If it's not, they don't, which is simple and works well.
Chendall, we have to wrap things up, but give us an observation, I guess, about how you think people should take in the fog that will no doubt appear at some time over the next 48 hours.
Well, you know, actually, in the next 48 hours, we're not going to see any fog.
Oh, all
right. Which I think is ironic as far as a fog festival. But you know, I'm of the same school with Sam where, you know, I like to view it from on top of it, looking at the sun down and making it very bright white on top. And then seeing the gray filtering on around it.
Chendall, thanks so much for being part of our program. Really enjoyed having you here and responding to all our listeners throughout the program. Thanks a million.
You're welcome.
We should also mention that the Pacific Coast Fog Festival takes place this weekend in Pacifica. Tell me again, Sam Green, when your film is second and third.
Second and third, Wednesday and Thursday night, and the talk show event at the Exploratorium tomorrow afternoon. And also later in November, we're doing something at the Oakland Museum. They have a show on the bay. So
really a pleasure to have you, Sam Green. Thanks so much for being part of the program.
Thank you very much for having me on.
We're going to leave you with one last email. This is from John. He writes, I'm a third generation San Franciscan. I was raised in the deep avenues. I know fog. I was in Vietnam from 66 to 67. When I returned and I was on my way home, I drove down 101 and I saw the fog rolling in. At that moment, I knew I was home and a great feeling of relief came over me. I love fog. Thank you, John. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.